From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Pencava. Dr. Richard Greenberg is blind in one eye and colorblind in another, but that disability had not prevented him from performing surgeries. As a neurosurgeon in Gaston County, Dr. Greenberg operated on one of the most delicate parts of the body, the spine. Over the course of his career in North Carolina and other states, 24 people filed lawsuits against him for making mistakes, mistakes that left some of them paralyzed or disabled for life. This information about Dr. Greenberg is now public because of the work of investigative reporter Joe Neff. But absent that work, the public might not know. In North Carolina, records about malpractice suits and other medical mistakes are for the most part closed to patients and the public. And today on The State of Things, we're looking at the process of policing doctors in North Carolina. We will, this hour, be talking with a doctor, an official with the North Carolina Medical Board, and a lawyer legislator who wants to change the system now in place. And we welcome your calls. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. That's 1-877-962-9862. What is the best way to grapple with this? Do we know everything we should know about our doctors? We start out with the specific case of Dr. Richard Greenberg. Joe Neff is the investigative reporter at the News and Observer who wrote about the neurosurgeon, and he's here in the studio. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Melinda. It's good to be here.
Well, in the past, in the case of Dr. Greenberg, he had started working in North Carolina about a decade ago, or less than a decade ago. He'd come from Arizona.
Correct.
And what you found in your reporting was that there had been issues in Arizona.
He had practiced in Arizona for about 16 years, and he was sued, I found out, 22 times there, and made it. Of those cases, seven ended in monetary settlements to the patients. There are also a number of people who did not sue but whose medical records were in the court files that I was able to find in Arizona.
Mm-hmm. So when he came to practice in North Carolina, was this an open record to officials here? Would that have been something that would raise concerns? Is 22 malpractice cases against one, is that par for the course? Is it more than usual?
Well, the number of cases filed is not as important as I would say the number of times that his insurance company paid out because of an act of malpractice. So when he arrived here in the state, he had already paid out five payments. Two lawsuits were pending, so there were two more, and these were all fairly substantial. The pending ones were fairly substantial cases where they eventually settled for hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Mm-hmm. So he sets up in Gaston County at Gaston Memorial Hospital.
Mm-hmm. He goes into practice with Dr. Stephen Gudeman, who he knew from his medical residency back in Virginia in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm. And what happened here that prompted you to do the story that you did, to look into it, into his track record?
Well, the News Observer had done several stories on doctors who, Dr. Olchowski from Wilmington, who had done some controversial stomach operations, and some two other doctors who had a history of substance abuse. And I was asked to go look at the issue of standard of care. Are there doctors out there who are not providing the care that they're supposed to? And in the course of my reporting, I came across Dr. Greenberg and was actually quite flabbergasted when I heard that there is someone with his history of malpractice who's also essentially blind in one eye and colorblind in the other eye, operating as a neurosurgeon. So the paper asked me to look into this and tell our readers about this.
Can you give us a couple of examples of what happened in North Carolina, of some of the complaints that went against him here?
Well, the two lawsuits that were in North Carolina that I found, those were, when I wrote the original stories, I only knew about two cases in North Carolina. I had learned about 60 or 70 patients in Arizona through the court records there. But the one case in North Carolina that I talked to his former patient was one where he operated, the allegation was that Dr. Greenberg operated on the wrong part of his spine, left a herniated disc untreated, and it blew out about a year and a half later, and this man was paralyzed from that for a while. and still is paralyzed in one leg from that. Some of the ones in the cases in Arizona, there was one case, a woman named Rosella Carafodius, who went in for, she had a pinched nerve under her skin down by her right hip. And it was very, just right under the surface of the skin. And he was supposed to go in and cut the nerve and release the pain. And she'd end up with a little numb spot on her leg. Well, what happened is somehow he went in and severed her femoral nerve, the main nerve for her leg, which is very deep inside the hip and the thigh. She sued. He settled for several $100,000, and the Medical Board of Arizona wrote him a letter of caution about this case. But there's a number of other cases. Each one is different, but most of them involve allegations of, you know, cut nerves and paralysis.
So was there anybody keeping tabs on Dr. Greenberg or doctors like that that would have a number of issues such as that, a number of complaints? Because obviously we all make mistakes, but I think what you're suggesting here, if I'm hearing correctly, is there were more mistakes under his care than others.
His number of settlements and numbers of suits filed against him certainly are, I compared it with other neurosurgeons, it's much higher than his colleagues in Arizona or in North Carolina. I would say the best source of information about this would be the insurance companies. They are paying the settlements. They're working with the doctor and in the course of these lawsuits and claims. And I believe that insurance companies talk with each other. So they do have a lot of information about this.
Mm-hmm. We're talking about policing doctors in North Carolina. Joe Neff is an investigative reporter for the News and Observer. And here in the studio as well, we have Tom Mansfield. He's director of the legal department at the North Carolina Medical Board. And Bill Faison, who is a state representative and also, when he's not a state representative, is a medical malpractice attorney. Our number is 1-877-962-9862 if you want to join the conversation. I'd like to start with you, Tom Mansfield. The North Carolina Medical Board is the place where doctors would be disciplined in North Carolina. What do you make of the case of Dr. Greenberg? The way Joe has been reporting on it this year, it appears that he had a lot more complaints from patients than others. Why was he not stopped sooner than Joe's reporting?
I appreciate the opportunity to be here and talk a little bit to your listeners about what the North Carolina Medical Board does. With regard to Dr. Greenberg, there's public information available now as a result of the October board meeting where an order was entered that limited Dr. Greenberg's practice. He can no longer practice surgery. And if someone wants to know the full story about Dr. Greenberg, that's a good place to start reading that order. Also, there was a public discussion of Dr. Greenberg's case, at the October board meeting, and a lot of information was brought out there that hasn't appeared in any other source and in any of the media reporting. With regard to how Dr. Greenberg was able to come and practice in North Carolina and why he wasn't stopped sooner, when he came to North Carolina, he submitted an application in 1997. The board carefully, thoroughly, completely scrutinized a great deal of information that it was given at that time regarding his history in Arizona. And the board interviewed him in person and, after carefully considering his history, made a determination that he was safe to practice. And Dr. Greenberg continued to be scrutinized over the years. I would say that he is perhaps one of the most scrutinized physicians in North Carolina. The board again scrutinized him in 2002, 2004, and ultimately, when new information did come to us in 2005, which mostly had to do with the North Carolina malpractice payments, which had not been reported to us by the insurance companies, nor had the last Arizona malpractice payment been reported to us by that insurance company. That information was brought to us by Mr. Neff. And upon learning about that and conducting additional investigation, the board made the determination that serious disciplinary action needed to take place, and it did.
Mm-hmm. Bill Faison, this is an area that you have been following from your own work. You would be the attorney that would represent patients against doctors in hospitals. And as a legislator, you've tried to get some legislation that would change things. Just briefly, before we go to our break, what do you think went wrong in this scenario, in this story? Why do you think it was a problem that Dr. Greenberg was practicing as long as he did before a reporter came along and did the story?
Oh, absolutely. I think the underlying fundamental problem is a philosophy that I believe is prevalent at the medical board, and that philosophy is that they are there to keep doctors in practice as distinct from being there to look after the public.
Well, Tom Mansfield, what would you say to that?
Well, Representative Faison and I have had this conversation before, and I could not more strongly disagree. That's absolutely not the case. We have 8 physicians, a physician and assistant, and 3 public members who serve on our board who spend hundreds of hours a year and put a lot of effort and dedication, enthusiasm, and energy into doing the work of the people, which is to decide who should practice medicine. And their job is to make sure that when I go to see my physician, he is safe.
Bill Faison?
I would take, I don't doubt the medical board is trying to do a good job. And I'll tell you, I have the greatest of respect for Mr. Mansfield and for the rest of the folks who work over there. But you need to understand, in my practice, I only represent people who've been maimed or killed by doctors who have breached the standard of care or who have used bad judgment or bad treatment of some adult or child. And so I see some awful care on a daily basis.
And we'll continue our conversation to see if how North Carolina stacks up against other states in the way information is made available to the public about doctors. This is The State of Things. With us are Bill Faison, a state representative and medical malpractice attorney, Joan Neff, a reporter with the News and Observer, and Thomas Mansfield with the North Carolina Medical Board. We welcome your calls. The number is 1-877-962-9862. You're listening to The State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. This is The State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Melinda Pencava. Dr. Richard Greenberg has been sued 24 times for medical malpractice, but for years that did not stop him from performing delicate spinal surgeries in North Carolina, in Gaston County. This summer, a series of articles about Dr. Greenberg's career came out in the News and Observer. Last month, the North Carolina Medical Board revoked his privilege to perform surgery. And today we're talking about what that case in particular, but in general, about the state's process of policing doctors. We are joined by Joe Neff, the investigative reporter for the News and Observer who broke the story. Thomas Mansfield is director of the legal department at the North Carolina Medical Board. And State Representative Bill Faison is a medical malpractice attorney. We are welcoming your calls, whether you're patient or doctor. The number is 1-877-962-9862. Joe Neff, you brought up in your stories that there is something in place in North Carolina when it comes to policing doctors. It's peer review, and it's doctors who are keeping tabs of other doctors.
Correct. It's an internal process at a hospital where doctors will get together in a closed room and discuss the cases. If there's a mistake that's been made, if there's a bad outcome, then they go over the case, and what they're supposed to do is be brutally honest with each other inside the room and correct the mistakes so that it's a learning process so that the doctor knows next time not to engage in whatever happened. And for most part, it seems to be a very successful system. However, it is entirely closed, and only the doctors are in on it. The public has no idea what transpires in peer review, and even in lawsuits, lawyers cannot get access to what happens in peer review. And while the medical society and doctors assure me that peer review works all the time, part of me thinks, well, I do not know because it is all closed. So it's basically a system based on faith.
Bill Faison?
Let me give you an example of peer review gone bad. There was a neurosurgeon in Wilmington named Raymond Sadler who was taking breaks from brain surgery with the brain open to go get a sandwich on more than one occasion. Sadler at one time had what was thought to be perhaps a grand mal seizure. And so they had him examined as part of their peer review process. And as a result of that examination, they decided two things. First, he should not fly an airplane from the left seat, the pilot in command seat. Second, he should have a backup surgeon in the room with him while he was performing neurosurgery. And I ask that backup surgeon, wasn't there a concern that he would have one of these seizures in the midst of surgery and fall into the patient's brain? And the surgeon's response was, well, we talked about that. And we concluded that more likely he would know he was about to have a seizure coming on. But if he didn't, he would probably fall backwards.
Did he ever, in fact, fall into an open brain cavity?
Never fell into an open brain cavity, did substantial damage to a number of folks, including a beautiful young woman I was representing who he left a quadriplegic on a ventilator as a result of his care.
So you think that if the information from the peer review had come out, those things could have been avoided?
Well, part of the problem with peer review is that it's done largely by docs, all of whom are on the medical staff. There are a lot of politics in hospitals, and people are very reluctant to criticize each other for fear that someone else will retaliate. So you've basically got the foxes taking care of the hen house. You really ought to have somebody outside looking at it, and that either needs to be an independent agency or it needs to be the public. If you could not find out on your own the information about Sadler, even though he had done these things, and it's all because of the peer review statute. So in this legislative session, I introduced legislation to wipe out this peer review privilege, so that if a doc is doing bad things, you as a consumer of healthcare ought to be able to find out about it and protect yourself. Now you can't.
And just to clarify, the peer review is what goes on at individual hospitals or individual gatherings of doctors, which is...
Or even in the medical society has peer review.
Okay. Which I want to bring Tom Mansfield in. Tom, Bill Faison's making the case for peer review should be more open. The medical society, you're with the medical board, I should state. What is its position on opening peer review?
Well, the board does not have a position on that and probably should not actually have a position on that. What we want to happen is where medicine's being practiced in the hospital, that's the best opportunity for other physicians to observe what a physician or surgeon is doing and correct problems where they occur. By the time that information gets to us, we're farther downstream. It's more useful if it's corrected there. The law does require that where a hospital changes a physician's privileges, which may be the result of a peer review process, they're required by law to report it to us. Now, what we learn is that that doesn't always happen. It didn't happen with Dr. Greenberg. We learned about a change in privileges from another way. But how it ought to work is it ought to be a brutal, honest evaluation of that physician's care for patients. And then if privileges to practice medicine at that hospital change, the medical board should know about it. The medical board has a very similar process for how we evaluate information that comes to us. With regard, using Dr. Greenberg as an example, we, in our investigations, looked at every case that about which there was any question regarding the quality of his care. And what we're really talking about here is quality of care broadly, not just malpractice.
Well, just when it comes to peer review, we have a few calls here. We have Sharon, who joins us now from Raleigh. Hi there, Sharon.
Hi.
Did you have a comment?
Yeah, I'm actually a veterinarian, and I'm using a fake name because I'm afraid of retaliation. And we have an ethics class in vet school, and I assume you have something similar in med school. And when we talked about this, they actually said that your job is not to rat on your fellow doctors, that you are to support them even to the point, I guess, of letting them go. And when I pointed out a case of a doctor who had been cited three times for not sterilizing surgical equipment, which seems, you know, insane to me in this point in time, that he would still be practicing with unsterile instruments and allowed to do so, they said, well, this is his livelihood. And, okay, we're talking about dogs, cats, horses, blah, 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 but, you know, I get the impression that the medical system sort of has the same attitude, that this is their livelihood and they're trying to protect their friends and sort of viewing patients more as widgets than people.
I would certainly say, based on my practice experience, I have reason to believe that some of that goes on with healthcare, not only for horses and cats, but also for people. We had a case where a physician put a false statement in a chart abandoned the patient to go on vacation, did not provide for other care for him, made it look like in the chart that he actually had arranged other care when he had not. And following the trial, where a jury awarded a verdict against that physician, I received a call from an investigator from the medical board. And I talked with him about the case, offered to send him a copy of the record so he could review it. He told me he didn't think he needed them right then. He called back 4 or 5 months later. I again went through the case with him, offered to send him the material so he could see exactly what happened. And his response was, well, now, Mr. Faison, you know that that's an issue of negligence, and we at the medical board don't deal with that. That's not what we look at. Well, if they're not going to look at negligence, if they're not going to look at how they're going to protect patients from docs who are doing bad things to them, then what really is the role in terms of protecting the people of this state and providing them with good medical care?
We're talking about policing doctors in North Carolina. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. Darlene Mensier is a doctor in Charlotte. She's a family practice physician, and she's also president-elect of the North Carolina Medical Society. That's a professional membership organization for doctors in North Carolina. Welcome, Dr. Mensier.
Welcome. Thank you.
Well, as we've been discussing, the records about doctors remain largely private in North Carolina. Make the case for why that should be.
Well, I think that there are issues regarding doctors in at least two areas. The quality of care issue is one, and then there is also one about doctors' personal issues with substance abuse or sexual relationships with patients and things. These things have been dealt with publicly by the North Carolina Medical Board at times, and it is well known that there is a physician health and effectiveness program to which the medical board refers physicians who have problems with substance abuse or relationships with patients. With substance abuse, of course, that can be a risk factor for doctors performing poorly in their activities with patients, but it isn't always the case that they are performing poorly with patients. It may be that they need help, and that program has a very good track record of returning physicians to good practice and not harming anyone in that process. Mm-hmm. The patient care, quality of care issues are an entirely separate issue, and I would like to clarify that as far as I'm aware, the North Carolina Medical Society does not provide peer review to anyone. So that I think I would need to be educated if we are, because I don't believe that I know that we are.
Okay, so it's more like at the individual hospital level.
That is correct. That is a hospital medical staff thing. But the integrity of peer review is very important to us. We do not want peer review to be a sham. We do not want peer review not to do what it should do, which is to identify physicians who need to improve their care, provide mechanisms by which they can improve their care, and if they don't, make sure that they don't continue to take care of patients. That is something that we would strongly support. The mechanism by which that should be done on a hospital-by-hospital level is indeed very challenging, because here in Charlotte, we see mergers of large groups to become even larger groups on an almost monthly basis, and it becomes very challenging to identify someone to review a physician who is not either his partner or his competitor. And for obvious reasons, that calls into question the integrity of the peer review process. There is a process going on in Maine in which they have a statewide process in which they have identified ahead of time groups of physicians in various specialties who can do peer review on people who are not geographically close to them, are not their competitors or their partners, and perhaps that's an avenue that we could explore in North Carolina, because I think peer review is an important thing to do well, and it should be done by people whose objectivity can be counted on.
I've heard in some places that one argument for not opening those records is that doctors couldn't be frank and candid. And I know, conversations in an editorial meeting might be more candid than what eventually gets on the air here in our shows. So is that, in your mind, a strong argument for that, of saying, look, you just really blew it, but I'm not going to say that if I think that this is on the record and going to come up to haunt me in court or you in court?
Well, I think that the integrity of the peer review process for physicians, you know, certainly needs to involve, you know, candor and protection. And I think where that protection has needed to come in the past, as I've understood it, is that in order to get people to tell you what they really think, they need to believe that they're not going to be subject later on to that person suing them for trying to, you know, provide negative feedback for a competitor. And I think if we could relieve everyone of the concern that the person doing the peer review was a competitor or a partner who might have reasons not to be as candid, then the quality of the peer review would be better, and then we could entertain the process of what to do with that, you know, information. But that has been an impediment, at least as I understand it in North Carolina up until now, is that the fear has been by those people trying to provide candid information that they would be then subject to, you know, should it become public, subject to retaliation by the person right. that they gave that negative review of.
Right. But finally, before we go, you've been hearing some of our conversation here today,
yes.
and the public has an increasing expectation of wanting more information and the right to know things.
Mm-hmm.
So what would you say to those who say, you know, it seems unfair to the public because sometimes there is this perception that doctors are protecting doctors by not not perhaps saying, you know, this guy has done this a lot of times and it should go beyond our little peer review at the hospital and should be reported to the state board, that there might be that protection of our own rather than getting that person, weeding out that that bad apple who would then, you know, perform surgery on a member of the public.
Right. Well, I think certainly the North Carolina Medical Society wants the public to have confidence in its physicians. We have absolutely no reason to want physicians to be doing bad medical care in North Carolina, and we do not want to stand for anything that stands for that. And we want the public to have good information about that. I think if we were to just open up all of peer review to public record, I think that we could not afford to do that, and afford meaning to you know, have that to be useful information until we had done some of the things that I had just talked about, and that is protect the people who are doing that from retaliation for their candor. And we also would need to have some confidence that the information that we were giving was in fact valid, because, you know, one of the things that's very hard for the North Carolina Medical Board is to have sufficient resources to do all the investigating of things that they might like to do. And one of the things that has been in the legislature is a request for an increase in fee in the North Carolina Medical Board, and we are going to get some increase in fee, but we may need even more increase in fee or more resources to the North Carolina Medical Board if we want it to have the opportunity to investigate to the degree that it would like to all the information regarding malpractice data that insurance companies may be giving them, hospital boards and medical staffs may be giving them. That's a large amount of data to sort through.
Mm-hmm. Darlene Mentzer, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Dr. Darlene Mentzer is a family practice physician in Charlotte and is president-elect of the North Carolina Medical Society. We are talking about the disciplining of doctors who go awry in North Carolina if there are multiple malpractice suits against them, complaints against them. We're talking also about the process of peer review. With us are Joe Neff from the News and Observer, Tom Mansfield with the North Carolina Medical Board, and Bill Faison, who's a state representative and medical malpractice attorney. And Bill Faison, you have, as you said, you have put legislation in to review the peer review system that we have, or
actually,
overhaul it.
I put in legislation to eliminate it, and the reason is that you, as a member of the consuming public, ought to be able to get information about the quality of health care being rendered by a physician you're looking at. You know, according to the Medical Society, in an article that they published in their journal, 15% of North Carolina's physicians are so impaired by reasons of alcohol, drug abuse, or psychiatric problems that they cannot safely treat patients. Last time I looked, there are a little over 17,000 physicians in this state. 15% of that number puts it pretty close to 2,500 people, or a little over 2,000 people. In any event, when last I was able to talk with the director of that program, I was told that they had only had 500 people go through that process in the entire time it had been in existence. That is the Physicians Health and Effectiveness Program, mentioned a moment ago by Dr. Mincer. That means that assuming that everybody went through in 1 year, and they didn't, they went through over a period of time, and assuming you had no new physicians coming into practice and none leaving, that even under their own numbers, they had 2,000 physicians in this state who were impaired by their own definition and could not safely treat patients, who were out there treating patients. And yet of the 500 they identified, they treated that information as being identified under peer review and would not provide any of that information to the general public.
So your legislation would do away, dismantle the peer review that we now have and open those records. What kind of reception did that get in the legislature?
The Medical Society has a very strong lobby at the legislature, and they were able to get that bill stuck in the Rules Committee, and it never came out for consideration. So there never was a chance even for public debate on that bill because of the political pressure and power that the physicians in the state are able to bring to bear at the legislative level.
Mm-hmm. Joe Neff, briefly, can you give us a quick, like, 20-second thumbnail sketch of how we got the system of peer review in the state? And
No, I can't do that. What I'd rather do is comment on my experience in talking with patients of Dr. Greenberg, and I interviewed about 50 of them. I asked the same question of every single one, whether it was the patient or the surviving family. And I asked, would you have consented to an operation if you had known his malpractice history and his vision problems? And the universal answer was, are you kidding? What kind of question is that? But none of them knew.
Joe Neff is a reporter with the News and Observer, and we'll continue our conversation with Tom Mansfield, who is with the North Carolina Medical Board, and Representative Bill Faison, a medical malpractice attorney. We're talking about policing doctors in North Carolina. The number is 1-877-962-9862. We'll get to your calls just ahead on The State of Things. This is The State of Things. I'm Melinda Penkova. We are talking this hour about what happens when doctors make mistakes or patients think they have. Should information about malpractice lawsuits be available to the public? Does the state adequately deal with doctors who may be falling down on the job? We are joined by Joe Neff, a reporter at the News and Observer, who has written about the case of Dr. Richard Greenberg in the Charlotte area. Also, Thomas Mansfield is with us. He is with the North Carolina Medical Board. He's director of the legal department there. And State Representative Bill Faison is a medical malpractice attorney. And our number is 1-877-962-9862. This is just a layperson's question for you, Tom Mansfield. Doctors are human. They make mistakes. But what is the threshold for how many errors a doc can make before the medical board would say, you know, you probably should not be doing surgery anymore?
Well, that's a great question. And, of course, the board's job is to make sure that every physician is safe so that when we go to the doctor, we know that we have a safe physician. With regard to Dr. Greenberg in particular, I think what's important to note is that by the information available to us, it looks like he's probably done something like 7,000 or 8,000 cases since 1982. The Arizona board looked at least 10 cases. They found him to be below the standard in two. And there was a public record there. In North Carolina, we've now reviewed by way of an outside expert, plus using the expertise of the board and the staff expertise, a dozen of his cases. And there's a huge difference between malpractice, suits filed, payments made, and the presence of negligence or unprofessional conduct. And if you look at that consent order that's on the medical board's website that I referred to in the beginning, you'll see that the board found four cases where he practiced below the standard. So, you know, we've thrown a lot of numbers around here today. I think it's very important to make a distinction between cases where a medical board in Arizona or North Carolina can prove that a physician committed unprofessional conduct versus a case in the civil justice system that may or may not have produced a payment. It's a lot harder for us to prove unprofessional conduct. We're the only organization whose purpose is to ensure the safety of the patients. That's, we were created by the General Assembly to do so. That is our pure and only purpose. So I think we have to make that distinction. Now, when is it too much is a great question. And that's we answer that question at the board on a case-by-case basis. The board takes a great deal of time, gathers a lot of information, uses its expertise, as I say, uses outside expertise, which is sort of our peer review type process, to determine whether someone's safe. And it's hard for someone on the outside looking in to understand how there can be so many suits but that those don't correlate to poor practice. Also, it's hard for someone on the outside looking in to hear that a neurosurgeon is blind in one eye and colorblind in the other, but that doesn't make him unsafe to practice. The six cases that I know about where a prosecutor would be able to prove that Dr. Greenberg practiced below the standard, none of those contains any credible evidence that the shortcoming had anything to do with his eyesight. I also wanted to go back to with regard to Sharon's question about physicians telling on each other. The board has a formal official position statement that you can read on the website by which we encourage physicians to report information to the board where they think someone is unsafe. I personally and the lawyers in my department on a regular basis take phone calls. Our investigative department regularly takes phone calls. Our annual report of activity shows that we get complaints from other healthcare providers. We encourage folks to tell us if they know something about a physician that makes them unsafe, to tell us. There's, in the almost 5 years I've been at the board, there has been just exactly the opposite of what Sharon described in the veterinary practice and what Representative Fazen referred to. Just the opposite. We encourage physicians to provide us information, and they in fact do.
Jonah?
Tom, have any physicians complained about Dr. Greenberg to you? Because I know of several cases where doctors have gone in and had to repair surgeries that fell beneath the standard of care, and I'm curious if any of them have made a complaint to you.
Well, this gets a little bit to the question about what information is confidential under the law. The law is made by the General Assembly and not the medical board. Information we gather in an investigation or a licensing process is confidential unless we introduce it to the public by way of issuing charges or entering an order against a physician. So I can't say, unless there's a public record, I can't say whether a physician has complained about another physician. What I can tell you is that there's no reference to how the information came to us in the order of Dr. Greenberg. So I'm limited by the law. And
could it have come to you just from Joe Neff's reporting?
It absolutely did not just come from Joe Neff's reporting, although I'm grateful to him because he did bring things to us that we should have known that are required by law, the insurance payments and the privileging change. We did not receive those, and perhaps but for Mr. Neff bringing those to our attention, we would not have reopened the investigation.
This gets to an issue about hospitals themselves. Did the hospital where Dr. Greenberg eventually practiced in Gaston County, Gaston Memorial, Joe, you talked to the head of the hospital there and asked whether they had looked at his record before.
And he declined to answer the questions. He would not say, I asked him, have you peer-reviewed? How was your process of granting him the credentials to operate at the hospital? And he wouldn't discuss those.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a quote that stood out in your reporting there. You're quoting the CEO of the hospital saying, get real, guy. He went through medical training. He went through medical school residency. He's board certified.
Mm-hmm. Well, right here in the medical board's order, in the case of Dr. Greenberg on page 3, it says that the hospital peer-reviewed Dr. Greenberg's patients in 2003. They concluded that he had met the standard of care. In 2005, they conducted a second peer review that resulted in the restriction of his surgical privileges. That's information available to the public because of the board's public record.
But it's Bill only Fazen. Available to the public now because of the hoopla that Joe Neff created by exposing to the public the problem that existed. The board finally took some action with regard to Raymond Sadler, but only after he became the subject of the not only local evening news, but national evening news. You know, one of the things that was said a moment ago by Mr. Mansfield was that it may be hard for the public to understand how a surgeon who's blind in one eye, colorblind in the other, could still be permitted to practice surgery. Well, that's a very true statement. It's hard to imagine as a member of the public how that can be acceptable and how that can be acceptable to a medical board. But I'll tell you, in many instances it is, and it's simply wrong. They're operating with the wrong standard, in part, I think, because they are very insular. The medical society has a tremendous impact on who goes on the medical board. The medical society is a very closed institution in and of itself. And in fact, one of the things I did during this legislative session was to introduce legislation which would change the way the medical board is constituted. It would open it up to all physicians in the state and make it possible for the physicians in the state to get other physicians to support them and run for the board as opposed to now, to be largely controlled by the medical society, which in and of itself is controlled by a relatively small group of people. We need more public involvement and public oversight.
Why not have more members of the public on the medical board?
Well, we have three public members now. We have one member who has to be a physician assistant or a nurse practitioner, and the board doesn't have a position. The General Assembly decides how the board gets appointed, and they make the laws, and the board doesn't have an opinion about that.
But certainly there are intelligent people at the board who would have an opinion on this one or the other. I mean, you can't say the General Assembly, it's all at the General Assembly's feet, is it?
Well, I can tell you some facts, and the facts are that the board members that I have now, I'll speak directly to the public members. We have three public members. That was an important change in the composition of the board that was made a few years ago. That does bring people who aren't in the healthcare profession into the mix. And also, the seven physician members of the board who are appointed by the governor as a result of a nomination by the medical society are extremely capable, high-performing board members, as are the public members and the PA member. I'm not advocating that we get these members one way or another, but I can tell you, in the time I've been at the board, excuse me, that the medical society has never interfered in the disciplinary process, and every board member that we've gotten as a result of the input from the medical society to the governor has been an extremely capable, dedicated, hardworking, high-level board member, and that's what I care about as a prosecutor.
Right. Tell me, there are out there online now sex offender databases. So if somebody were to be released from prison on a sex offense and there's a recidivism rate, people in a neighborhood where that person may be moving can know who that is and take appropriate action. Why not have such a database for at least the more egregious doctors? I mean, it's often been said in the whole debate over malpractice insurance and tort reform that it's a small percentage of the doctors who are responsible for the preponderance of the cases. There are some bad apples, essentially, who are screwing up more. But it raises the rates for all of the doctors. And is that not unfair to the entire profession to have that happen? Why not have a database that says, okay, here are the doctors who have settled cases, have had malpractice cases against them, either lost in court or hospitals decided they were going to settle because it was cheaper to do that?
Great question.
But Bill Faison and then Tom Manson.
Great question. The answer is that it already exists. There is a federal database. The only problem is you and I don't have access to it. The medical board has access to it. Medical malpractice insurance companies have access to it. But you and I don't have access to it. Moreover, the medical malpractice insurance companies actually share data about every physician who has a malpractice claim paid against them and how those claims came about, what the conduct was that led to it. All that information is also accumulated nationally. You and I don't have any access to that information either. You're right. The database is there. It should be made available to the public.
Tom Mansfield?
Well, my medical board believes that the public should have more information than less. And I can tell you, in the time I've been there, I've witnessed a shift in the direction of providing more information, largely through orders that the board enters. If we leave aside the malpractice information for a second, I can tell you that on our website, in the form of an annual report, there is that exact sort of database that you're referring to.
Of the bad apple doctors?
Exactly.
Really?
Now, it does not include, except in cases like Dr. Greenberg, it doesn't include specific information about malpractice payments, but it has to do with disciplinary actions taken generally. With regard to whether the board should publish malpractice data, it's a great question. I don't know the answer to it. It's subtle and it's complex and not very susceptible to getting answered in this forum, I think. But if you give patients the raw material, if we just give them the raw data that is at the National Practitioners Data Bank without context, I don't think that we're doing consumers a favor.
Joe Neff?
Yeah, I've actually looked at scrubbed versions of the National Practitioners Data Bank and was able to, for my story, identify Dr. Greenberg in there and find some of the payments that the medical board did not know about.
And by scrubbed, you mean the names?
The identifying information is taken out, and it's basically a research database, but you can, you know, by putting things together, I could figure out who he was. In the case of Dr. Greenberg, when I wrote my first story, if you were to go to the North Carolina Medical Board website, he had a clean record. And if you went to the other state he practiced in Arizona, he also came up with a clean record. So,
okay. I just want to go to the phones right now. Our number is 1-877-962-9862. Hi there, Richard.
Hi.
Hi, Richard. Richard's calling from Greensboro. Welcome to the conversation. Did you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to point out that the focus of this conversation on bad apple doctors, errors, and so on, neglects a very important point, which is that physicians practice in a set of systems, hospital systems, that include not just physicians, but also the other caregivers, labs, processes, and procedures that actually produce the care that patients receive. And the problem, major problem with both peer review and the tort system as ways of trying to fix the quality of health care is that they don't really get at those systems. They don't really provide the kind of engineering support that's needed to change and improve the daily practice, the daily operation of those systems. Using peer review and the tort system to try to improve healthcare quality is kind of like firing workers in an industrial plant for the defects that are produced in the goods that they produce. That's really not the point. The point is to figure out the origins of those problems and to build support systems that preclude the problems in the first place.
So what would you advocate doing?
I would advocate both transparency and a movement away from transparency of information about quality, but also a movement away from the tort system as this kind of blunt instrument for quality improvement, and instead look to the strong and growing movement in this country for an engineering approach to the improvement of healthcare, lend support for that in terms of not just physician education, but also use of information systems and so on and so forth.
Okay, Bill Faison.
In my practice experience, which now I guess runs somewhere into more than 30 years, I've only seen system failure errors in two or three cases. Most of the case errors are people failures, not system failures. One other point while we're talking about it is that the idea that you can go to the medical board website and get a sense of the physicians who the medical board is interacting with over practice problems, I think needs to be clarified. It's only the very tip of the iceberg that I think you see on their website, because most of their reviews are done under peer review. They invite physicians in and they tell them, you don't have to come, but if you don't come, action could be taken against you, which would become public. And they bring them in, look at the medical records, assign some nominal punishment to them, interact with them on a one-on-one basis, send them away, and there is no public record of any kind of that. It is all hidden under peer review, which is why we need to eliminate the peer review privilege altogether.
Final question for you, Joe Neff. Richard Greenberg, the neurosurgeon, brought us to this subject. What's he doing now?
He has a practice in Shelby, North Carolina. He is not allowed to operate, but he can examine patients, diagnose, prescribe drugs, and that's where he is.
Okay. Well, thank you all for joining us today. Joe Neff is an investigative reporter at the News and Observer. State Representative Bill Faison is an attorney at the People's Medical Malpractice Law Firm in Durham. And Thomas Mansfield is director of the legal department at the North Carolina Medical Board. And that's the state of things for today. If you have a comment about our program, our email address is sot@wunc.org. This is North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Thanks for listening. I'm Melinda Penkava.